hello, everyone. Daria and Ivy are here at the tail end of season one, and we're picking it up with the message. Sam, are you?
Yeah, it's an,
yeah.
Given where we're at, it's a kind of ominous title.
Yes.
Given we're staring down the barrel of homeworld gems, I suppose you'd say, native gems, reapproaching the Earth, and none of our heroes think this is good for the Earth.
Yeah.
And I was tempted to guess that this is Peridot sending said message, but I guess if she had a message to send, we only just saw her ranting at them, so...
Yeah, I guess when we last heard from her, she was just saying she was going to report them. I guess send them to the principal's office. They're bad girls.
Yeah, so whether this is a message saying, oh, we're totally coming for you this time.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because one thing we did establish is they can send things to Earth via, well, not via warp pad, but through space. So if they've got spaceships, presumably they can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess
here we go.
We're going to find out.
We are the crystal gems. We'll always save the day. And if you think we can,
I can't relate to my robot son.
My mind is the internet. I know every continuity mistake ever made on television.
Unsettling and funny at the same time.
Okay, we have a fairly straightforward runaround this week. I say runaround because we don't actually run around anything. We open on the universes. I don't know if that makes them the multiverse. We open off the universes on the beach. Greg and Stephen are jamming, brewing up some songs and album ideas after the business with Lapis Lazuli a few weeks back, or a few episodes back, depending how you want to count. Greg remembers her as a water witch that almost cured everyone, which, to be fair, yes. But Stephen remembers her as just a desperate person who wanted to get home and didn't understand anything, which, also fair. While they're playing around, they hear an awful sound, which at first they think is their equipment, but is coming from the Wailing Stone in the temple. And the Wailing Stone, as the gems relate over trying to stuff things in the Wailing Stone's wailing hole to keep it quiet, hasn't activated in ages. And it should sound like a voice, not just this feedback cacophony which we're getting. Realizing it's an audio problem, Stephen offers to take it to Greg back down on the beach where he's been playing with his audio equipment, and they do channel the Wailing Stone's wail into the equipment, but the battery in Greg's van can't take it and they get nothing. They think they can almost hear things, but it doesn't quite make it before the battery blows out. They're unimpressed by this. Pearl in particular is a bit of a jerk, calling it the whole thing a waste of time. And the other three bound off back to the temple. Stephen tries to bound and lands on his butt. Greg is disappointed because he was trying to help and trying to mean something and failed, and he sings a sad song about it. And as they muse on the evening's events, Greg says, but if it's not audio, what is it? And Stephen remembers playing with the television earlier and trying to put the wrong plug into the wrong socket, and thinks it could indeed be video, which is communicated by a strange charade. They go back to the temple. Greg essentially begs for another chance, and they give it to him. He's all rigged up his TV and his sound equipment and the Wailing Stone, and after some tinkering, it resolves into a video message on the television, and it's La Blue Girl herself, Lapis Lazuli, and she has a message for Stephen, and I guess ultimately the others as well, that homeworld has changed. It's so advanced. It's nothing like she knew it. There's a gem who knows them and is on their way to Earth, and that gem is not alone, and don't put up a fight or it shall cause devastation. Everyone is naturally kind of aghast at this, except Garnet puts lid on it, shakes hands with Greg in gratitude, and they go back to the temple. Well, or rather, they would go back to the temple, but we are left with Stephen playing with a vocoder sounding like a robot, saying his whole brain is internet and he knows every continuity mistake on television. And that was the message. Obviously, we're back in the ongoing plot. This not Peridot sending the message, but someone sending a message probably about Peridot. And with the, it's probably a safe guess that the end of the season is going to bring Peridot or whatever this is to our shores. And now our heroes are at least forewarned that resisting could cause devastation.
Yeah, awfully defeatist message there for Lapis to be sending, right? You know?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand Lapis. She's been trapped in a mirror for, was it hundreds, thousands of years? You can understand she's not feeling too optimistic about things.
Yeah. Yeah, when she was there, she was just talking about wanting to go home, and then she goes home and her home is unrecognizable. It makes sense.
Yeah, so she probably figures just warning them to not put up a fight is actually the best thing for them. If her homeworld just seems so amazingly advanced to her, she probably thinks it would make short work of any humans or Earth or crystal gems in its way.
Yeah. It's pretty scary when you think about kind of some of the technology that they have, which is essentially magic to us, the concept of that being old and out of date and ancient and no match for whatever they're bringing.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah. And all that circa, judging by what Rose said a few episodes back, 5,000 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and apparently Homeworld doesn't have the, what do they call it? I can't remember the name for it, but there's a school of thought that thinks that if a society was composed of ageless people, that it wouldn't advance through because there'd be no generational turnover. But obviously, Homeworld, the Gemsphere, doesn't have that.
Mm, yeah. Well, I guess we don't have a whole lot of information about, like, gem death, but Pearl implied that it could happen. Like, they can still get hurt and die. So, like, I guess the question is, how often does that happen? On what time scale? And how do they make new ones? Like, how often do they make new ones and incorporate them into the society?
I mean, do they only make them on a replacement basis, maybe?
Right. Or are they just, like, trying to make more and more of them and just populate the whole universe or what? Like, we don't know what they want. We don't know really anything about their mission.
And even though we've seen the kindergarten, we don't know how readily new gems are created.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, since we met Lapis first, she was the first one that we met that was not our familiar gems. And then we met Herodot afterwards. Lapis didn't know that Stephen has, in fact, had some back and forth with this Peridot. So she's probably shocked to find out somebody on Homeworld knows who he is. But, you know, just remembering the conversation they had in Marble Madness, like, she's sitting there trying to figure out if Stevens have replaced humans on Earth as the dominant species. I'm sure it's in her notes.
Yes, I love Stephen. I still love Stephen describing the various other humans, including Onion, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Yep. Yeah.
But yeah, it's very much a sort of setting up episode. It's a bit of a pause in the main plot, because while it's an important thing that this makes it clear that someone is coming and how much that someone knows,
right,
it's still all things that are going to happen.
Yes. Yeah, it's still building, and it's pretty slow, and this is primarily a tech difficulties episode. This is like, I mean, we can all relate, but that's like the main thing was trying to figure out how do we even get the message.
And a bit of self-worth issues from Greg, which is fair because, I mean, Amethyst being dismissive after she loses interest, that's not new, but Pearl just actively saying what a waste of time.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to, especially when their ideas at this point amount to nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I know that she just kind of looks down her nose at human technology that is just completely pointless or whatever, and she doesn't seem to have that high of an opinion of Mr. Universe, but, you know, I like that we basically get the opposite of that from Garnet, you know, that she stopped what they were doing to just take his hands and thank him. That was, like, one of my favorite things about this episode, is that she, you know, we find out that he looks up to them so much, he thinks highly of them, says in his song, and that he's just so sad that they're not trusting him or giving him a chance. And then, you know, she kind of recognizes that that's been going on and just takes a moment in this serious situation to say, thank you, we wouldn't have gotten this without you. That was so great.
Yeah, Garnet's pretty good for morale at the end of this episode. Yeah. Because she also takes the win that they got the message through. The other sort of, oh my goodness, Peridot's coming and she's not alone and she's going to squash the whole earth and everything. And she's like, you know, we did it. We got the message. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah. She's kind of one thing at a time. Like, let's deal with this right now. Let's focus on this tiny victory.
And probably thinking, well, if we are all going to die or get squished or cracked or whatever, then, you know, there's no benefit in, you know, leaving Greg on a sad note.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it is really interesting because she is, I mean, without a doubt, the most stoic member of the team, the least demonstrative with emotion. And then she seemed to be the one that was the most empathetic in this episode. I mean, outside of Steven.
Yeah. Well, this goes to what we've discussed before, that she has emotional restraint and discipline rather than an actual absence of emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And I like that she kind of, I don't know if strategic is the right word, but just kind of that she thanked Greg in a very sort of businesslike way, saying, okay, this has to happen right now. I'm going to thank him for his contribution because that's important. I really appreciate that.
And I think she also knew, even though she would, I think she has said that she's not the leader, she's at least aware she is kind of seen that way.
Oh, yes.
And knows what it'll mean for Greg to have this respectful handshake from the ostensible leader of the group, saying that he made a worthy contribution.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it meant.
And, you know, it's not a useless contribution. Now they won't be caught completely flat-footed.
Right.
When the whoever, whatever comes.
Right. But as you were saying in your recap, it did have a very sort of traditional, straightforward, like common kind of plot, I guess, like that it goes in a circle where, you know, when we're starting, I kind of actually don't like it when shows telegraph that much. There's occasionally an episode that does that, and this is one of them where, you know, they're talking about Lapis, they're focusing on Lapis, they're bringing her up in case you don't remember her from episode 25 and 26, now that we're in, what is it, 49? And then, of course, all of a sudden she's relevant. So,
and on a lesser scale, they're Chekhoving the, oops, don't put the audio in the video.
Exactly.
That could go wrong. Imagine if you did that.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of that in certain, there's certain episodes that set things up like that. And as soon as they mention something that you haven't heard in a while, you're like, oh, they're reminding us that this exists and this is going to be important. It's a little more traditional storytelling that I'm used to seeing from this show. So that surprised me a little
yeah.
when I saw this.
On longer shows, you often spot it when they suddenly drop it into the previously on whatever.
Oh, yeah. Thank goodness this doesn't have that. We don't really have clip shows and stuff. We don't have traditional introductions or recaps. Yeah, that's
true. And ultimately, as important as it was, that little actually took place in this episode. So we did get some faffing about for the Univorce Boys at the start, and we got two songs to fill up the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much you can draw from, you know, I can't work the audio, and oh, I can't work the audio, but now it's video.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure most of what Greg said about feeding it through flangers and whatnot was absolute babble.
From what I understand, the words, they're real words, yeah. Just that don't, should not be used in this way.
Which I think was really deliberate, because, I mean, the people that are doing this stuff know that. You know, so.
And at any point, they could have called down to, well, the sound people and said, yeah. What would make sense to go here? And they probably actually called down to the sound people and said, what would make no sense to go here?
Yeah, it's interesting that, so this one is not boarded by the people that tend to have the more accurate, like, music playing. It's, I always notice when Jeff Liu is on an episode, he does the right fingerings and stuff on the music playing and whatnot. So this is not one of those. And, you know, I'm wondering, you know, if they had given this episode to people who had more experience with that stuff, if they would have been tempted to make it like super technically accurate, or if instead they're giving it to Lamar Abrams and giving it to Helen Joe, they're just like, let's just say a bunch of words and it's hilarious, you know, because he seems to be the most absurd person. Lamar just seems to have the weirdest, most intentionally, I guess, I don't even know what to call that kind of humor, like absurdist on purpose, you know, humor. So
yeah, that said, I can say from experience that that at least on some equipment, some analog equipment, if you do try to video straight into an audio thing, it does sound like all kinds of mess.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you're probably not going to get it clarified by adding low octave effects and adding fuzz and whatnot.
Funnily enough, if you had modern equipment, it would probably be smart enough to filter out what it didn't need and go straight to the audio part.
Yeah. But video.
One of my sound editors, you can copy audio video files straight into and it just chucks out the video part and gives you the audio.
Yeah, it's cool.
But it's also more fun to watch people playing with cables and sliders and big chunky amps and things.
Yeah, indeed. I wonder if I ought to try to show you this since we're talking about this audio daddy-o stuff right now. There is a clip of how they made some of that noise that they released. Do you think I should try to show it to you over the screen?
Let's give it a shot. Worst happens, it doesn't work. Worst happens, it collapses our connection all over again.
I'm going to try to do a screen sharing thing and try to show, you know, people at home will just hear the audio, but there's a video that the Crooniverse released. So this is called Making the Message. It's a behind the scenes thing. Hopefully it won't be echoey and weird. Look at all their stuff.
Ooh, cool.
They're just making noise.
Let's just jam down on these, see what they do.
It's way more complicated.
Oh.
Wow.
It's already got like about 8 tracks there on the screen we can see. That's obviously not even counting stuff we can't see because they've scrolled it off.
Cartoon looks way less complicated than what they're actually doing.
What's happening?
Did he stop?
So that was fun.
Yeah. They got some cool toys too.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun.
I thought you might enjoy that. I don't imagine that your equipment quite looks like that.
No, I really want to go with some of their toys.
Yeah. I want one of those things that has a big honking sponge, even though they didn't have one. Let's see. So, yeah, that was fun. Video.
Yeah, I'm guessing at this point we're back to the Stephen Bomb.
Yes. So this is the second episode in the Stephen Bomb. First was Rosa's Scabbard, and now this one aired as episode 46, but it's actually episode 49.
And if the Stephen Bomb is a week-long event, and we've got 3 episodes left, looks like it's just headlong to the season finale.
Interestingly, they included season 2, episode 1 as part of the Stephen Bomb.
Okay.
But they aired the last 2 episodes of season 1 on the same day. They did a double.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And even though we'll separate those on our podcast, we will be watching them the same day. So you won't have to, you know, go to bed after the penultimate episode and think about that. But I better not talk about it too much because I'll get really excited. But for now, you know, we're still in sort of this build-up. And, you know, for something that's building up to a season finale, you know, it is moving, but it's not high action. Like, we don't know what the conflict's nature is even. It's just something mysterious.
And yeah, we've taken as read, well, we're not taken as read. They've said that whatever's coming is pretty bad, but they haven't said exactly what, if this is an invasion fleet or something else horrible to the earth.
Right. So she said about a gem who knows Stephen's name and she's not alone. So that's very vague. Don't know who's coming.
So it's possibly Peridot and possibly has one or more other gems with her.
Yeah. I guess the best we can hope for is that it'll just be Peridot with whoever she's not alone with, but one never knows.
And we also don't know if she's going to bring some enormous anti-everything that's not a gem or anti-everything that's not Peridot bomb. Just going to do a scorched earth and reclaim a kindergarten and whatever else. Oh, don't mess with me, VPN. Peridot's going to bring some enormous human-burning, earth-scorching thing and just wipe out anything that's there and take back her kindergarten and whatever else. Might want to raid the gem stuff that our crystal gems have been hoarding for the past centuries.
Well, it's hard to know since we have no idea what gems want. And Lapis, kind of when she talked to Steven about all of this, she assumed he knew things that he does not know about what the crystal gems are about, and that they only care. She said they never cared about other gems. They only care about the earth and stuff. So he doesn't even know what the fight between Homeworld and them ever was. And the gems aren't sharing it with him. So, you know, Lapis's message didn't say anything about what they wanted, so maybe just assumes that he knows.
Well, yeah, and she's still connecting him to Rose Quartz, too, so... Yeah. Well, at least she did know enough to just out and out call him Steven. She wasn't still stuck on the identifying him by his gem thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she seemed confused that he would be a crystal gem and still be nice to her. So she clearly knows what the crystal gems are, and anybody who knows what the crystal gems are must know that Rose was in charge of them. So, it's a little bit weird.
Yeah, and we speculated before if they kind of recognize each other via sort of gem sense rather than visual.
Yeah, she'd be like, hey, how come you're not blue or bright pink?
How come you're small? Rose Quartz didn't come out of a tiny amethyst birth hole.
Oh, what would her kindergarten hole look like?
She'd have something fancy. I mean, Rose has always had to me the idea of someone who was, I suppose the human term would be privileged or upper class, mm-hmm. before she got into all this leading rebellions and camping out in temples on... Mm-hmm. on human-ridden planets.
Yeah, she's definitely walking around in, like, a princess dress.
Yeah. And, you know, she's still got that air about her, and, yeah. Well, she's a bit posh.
Yeah, and we've got, like, this whole setup of her character as this sainted situation where her portrait is up on the door, and everybody just kind of speaks of her with reverence, so...
Who made that picture? I mean, we saw Greg can make album covers. Maybe he can make pictures of his girlfriend.
That's right. I was going to mention that, but I forgot that he is a pretty good artist if he's the one that's drawing his own album art, right? I mean,
yeah. Good. And as he said at the time, I just got a great idea for an album cover.
Right. That's true. I guess they figured they needed to come back to that.
We've probably been sitting on a whole concept album about the time that Lapis almost dried up the earth.
Yeah. Well, she's a riptide queen and she's super mean.
But yeah, and this goes back to my thing that Greg's younger days are sort of the entirety of the 60s through the 90s.
Yeah, which could be a number of reasons for that. But I don't know if that's just how the writers will portray all these bygone eras kind of smushed into one idea, or if they actually were that way in the Steven Universe.
Yeah. I can go with it. Like I said before, I like the kind of ambiguous time period things.
Yeah.
That Steven's got a smartphone and the CRT television.
Yeah, and he's got video games, and then Greg has got actual vinyl records in his van.
Yeah, well, Greg would have vinyl. Greg would be a vinyl man.
I don't think I saw a record player, but I did see some albums sitting there in milk crates in this episode.
Yeah. He'd be all, look, this is the rare 1975 pressing where they put the band's name backwards.
I'm almost sure one of them looks like the cover of a Queen album.
I didn't look.
It was just in the background. So it's just like, there's so many of these details that they just throw in there. But, you know.
I was trying to think of Queen album covers. I mostly know the ones with the eye. I know News of the World. That's a pretty distinctive album cover with the giant robot thing. Mm. Is that the one
I don't
you think you saw?
It was a face, but just one face, not four faces.
there's one which I can't even remember what songs are. I just remember the cover. That the most of the cover is this giant being which looks almost like a cross between a robot and an Easter Island statue.
Yeah. So.
All the rest I know, I can remember are the four faces or the crest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times they will just make a reference to it and not make it exactly the same. But if you've seen it, then you know, oh, that's probably that. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, well, look at all the David Bowie likes of his Mr. Universe gimmick that we saw in the earlier flashback.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some definite homage going on there. I'm thinking about when the Wailing Stone first went off and they were talking about, at first he thought it was some kind of weird feedback from what they were doing, but then he goes back to the temple and they're all trying different things to stop it. I love that scene.
Oh, yeah, and then they generally don't work as a buddy, like gone sort of castle of stuffing and cushioning and putting Stephen on top to weigh it down.
It's just sticking couch cushions in the damn thing. Just, you know, put Stephen on top of it. That's the finishing touch. I don't think Amethyst tried anything. She just stood there and screamed. Pearl tried to bubble it. Stephen just sticks his arm in it and it ends up coming out of his face.
Yeah. Oh, wonder if they could have still heard it if she'd sent it to the bubblearium.
I don't know. Probably. I mean, at least if they went inside of the temple, if they could smell the burrito, they could probably hear the Wailing Stone.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm. But that was interesting, though. Like, I mean, under other circumstances, it seems like Amethyst might get a kick out of hoarding that thing, but she was not enjoying it. Like, they even accused her of, is this a prank that she might be doing? And she's like, no, I don't like it. Poor Amethyst.
Yeah, she probably thought it was amusing for about a second longer than the others. She really got over it.
Yeah, I mean, when they first found that thing, which was in Rose's room. So we're looking at episode 19. We're looking at something that came back from episode 19. She seemed to enjoy the loud noise. She deliberately set it off and then laughed about it. But yeah, I'm sure it gets old very quickly when you can't hear yourself think. So, yeah, that was one of my favorite parts when Garnet just stuffed it with cushions and put Steven down on top of it. It was cute. I also liked Garnet-wise that she started the car with her electricity powers.
Yeah, when the battery first went, I thought, is Garnet going to do her bit of personal lightning to start things up again? And sure enough...
Wow, you saw that coming, huh? We've only seen that really once, I guess.
Well, I was reminded of the video game incident, Meat Beat Mania Recharge. So.
Yep. Yeah, I guess she redirected lightning in Future Vision, but she juiced up a machine in episode 11. So it's just funny. She's holding the jumper cables. Okay, go for it, Garnet. And then, of course, Amethyst's hilarious line, I've never started a car with a key before. Okay. That's way easier. Amethyst, tell us your stories. Tell us your dirt. Actually, probably don't tell us.
This is how Pearl learned to fix cars because you stole some for her.
They really put their skills together in this one. Greg's audio stuff, and then all of them did stuff.
And Steven's ability to make people come together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They do a good job kind of keeping him character consistent throughout, like even with the very serious content of the message that they're receiving. Steven's commentary on it was like, Glavis sounds so unhappy. So he's focusing on that.
Yeah, the first thing he said to his dad about the Water Witch song was, oh no, she was just sad and scared and trying to get home.
Yeah, he's always empathizing with other people. Wondering what their side of the story is.
Definitely his mother's son in that regard.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Greg is pretty empathetic too, though. He's a soft guy.
Yeah.
So, What else? Oh, I liked that Pearl kind of dropped her comment about the, oh, we haven't heard a Wailing Stone activate since the Rebellion, which is really interesting. Since we used them for the Rebellion, I think she said. And that's kind of cool to think about, like, oh, they were using this technology back then to communicate. But now it's just screaming.
Yeah, well, could have been poor Lapis knew about Wailing Stones, and if I get the Order of Events, I don't know if they obtained it by the time Lapis came out of the mirror.
Wailing Stone?
Yeah. Yep, there we go. So she might even have spotted it in her brief exposure to what's going on, or from within the mirror even. And she might just not quite be able to, especially because she's however many thousands of years out of date, she might not be able to sync up her knowledge of current gem communication technology with trying to send to a Wailing Stone.
I wonder, and I don't know what kind of equipment was available to her, because it almost seemed like she was jumping in to make this recording. You know, who knows what kind of equipment she was using, or if she was doing it worrying that someone was going to catch her or punish her if they knew that she's sending messages, like what even is available to her. But she actually was wondering about, like, whether if they hadn't destroyed that communication hub, if the communication hub would have received it too. But Sugalite punched that a lot, so it does not work anymore.
Well, maybe even the hub might have been able to translate the signal better. Who knows?
It definitely looked like it was more advanced than these little Wailing Stones. They were set up for sound.
Maybe they've got their own advantages if you're running a rebellion. Maybe they're like untappable or something.
Tuned to some frequency that Homeworld didn't have the same frequency or something. I don't know, I've heard some stuff about, like, they'll actually use noise that sounds a little bit like this for encrypted messages sometimes. Or like with notifications and stuff.
Yeah, and it could be modern gems can't hack it because it's so old, like trying to wiretap two cans and a piece of string.
Yeah, I do remember that Peridot was complaining that the technology in the kindergarten was archaic. So it'd probably pick up something, but if you're sending so much more data than it can usually process, then not gonna be able to translate it into anything. It's like, you know, you ever get like a complicated like Word document and you try to open it in Notepad or something?
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
But if you scroll down far enough, sometimes you can find some sentences. That's happened a lot.
I like that. That's a good comparison. Yeah.
It is pretty hard to believe. I'm a little on Pearl's side there that you can plug it into an old TV and it'll start working. But, you know, video input is video input.
Yep.
The electromagnetic spectrum is all the same. Mm-hmm. Oh, my mind is the internet. I know every continuity mistake ever made on television.
That's definitely someone who's dealt with the fans before or been there.
That was really funny. Help, I can't relate to my robot son. That was cute. Oh, did the recording that you were watching, I couldn't tell just watching you watch it, but did the recording have some static at the end of it instead of an outro? It was supposed to have like static to make a reference to the audio difficulties, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. That'd be cute.
And I was curious also why the Wailing Stones stopped screaming after they got the message. Like, how can it tell that they watched it, you know?
Maybe it can. Maybe amongst what it can do is the equivalent of, you know, scene 7:56 p.m.
That'd be great. It's certainly preferable to it just going off for the next 20 years.
That, or maybe it didn't stop and they just buried it.
Throw this in the ocean, please. Gosh, though, I'm just kind of thinking about if I'm Garnet in that situation, like, what do you even do with a message like that? Like, she kind of tried, like we were talking about, she kind of distracted them with, like, a comment about, all right, we got the message, this is great. But, like, then she didn't address it at all. So, I don't know, maybe she's doing that for Steven's benefit and doesn't want to talk about how serious things have gotten in front of him.
Yeah, even if they're just coming for our heroes, that still they still pose a fairly direct danger to at least Beach City. I mean, it does seem that whatever else they are able to work out where on Earth the crystal gems are, and unless there's lost accounts of Peridot trying to land ships in France or something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, once you get in front of it, you can see this temple looks pretty gemmy, but there's a lot of Earth to explore if you don't quite know where you're going. But, you know, at this point, it's not clear how is Lapis involved. Like, how does she know? How is she overhearing Peridot saying Stephen's name? You know, so
Lapis. In fact, what even is Lapis? And that's a good question. How is she, even if she's just sort of some refugee, or I suppose she's not really a refugee if it's her home, but even if she's just some lost wayward daughter, why is she anywhere near what appears to be some kind of administrative come military operation?
Right. If she's like flying back to homeworld, what happened? Did they intercept her or, you know, interrogate her because she's coming into the planet and she's been out of commission for however long? Like, who are you? Identify yourself kind of thing. And suddenly there's all this security that she didn't expect or something. We really don't know what her homecoming was like. She made it.
Maybe because they knew she was from Earth, Peridot got to question her and shot her mouth out and said something like, is the planet still covered in Stephens?
Wait, anything is okay with Lapis as long as they don't shove her back in a mirror.
Poor Lapis, I do hope there's some kind of counseling service on homeworld.
Oh boy. Yeah. Would be nice. Oh boy.
Follow-up questions!
Should I ask you a question that's probing? Probe your brain.
Please do. Yes, probe my brain.
I want it to be about Greg, because even though this is kind of a plotty episode, I feel like it's kind of a Greggy episode.
It's definitely a Greg episode, yeah.
Plus, we got music from Mr. Universe, so
yes.
I will ask you to tell me what you think Greg should do regarding kind of, I mean, clearly something is about to happen, so what should Greg's stance be for, like, Steven's involvement as we're going into a battle? Like, as a parent, should he be keeping him out of it, or should he be like more understanding about Steven's part in it, even though it's dangerous?
See, I can see that his first instincts, and certainly a noble one, would be to try to keep Steven out of it. However, if the Peridot or whomever is coming for Steven, he might also be aware there's only so much he can do to keep Steven out of it. I mean, if the gems indeed have spaceships, then getting him out of Beach City won't do much good, particularly if they just ravage the city looking for him. I think no matter what decision he makes, no matter what stance he takes, it's going to not be the right one for him or for the situation. And I think on some level he understands that. He's said in so many words he's out of his depth when it comes to gem stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's accepted that the crystal gems at least have the best knowledge, the best reaction when things get to high gem situations. And that he might not like what they have to say, but his best bet is to turn to them and find out what to do. Voice his concerns, of course, which are almost certainly, holy crap, alien rock women are coming for my son. But yeah, I think I can't see him going so hard against them as to screw everything up for everyone. I think he should take the stance of, I don't want Stephen to be involved in this, but also from the position of, I'm not actually sure I have any choice in whether Stephen's involved in this, and potentially neither do the other gems, really.
That must be really hard for somebody like him to parent Stephen, knowing that he wants to protect his son, but that his son is a superhero.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know how much the other gems, including Rose, may have told him about the possibilities of these things happening. I mean, they must have at least been aware that when they, homeworld, the gem government, whoever, might turn their attention back to their, well, to all their stuff left on Earth. Or so I don't know if he and Rose had some kind of, hey, leave it at work policy, but it would seem, especially if they're going to create a son together, that his potential involvement in such things should be a factor that they have to discuss.
Yeah, definitely. kind of thinking about how he usually does seem to defer to the gem's judgment, and then every once in a while he'll say, no, you know what, I'm putting my foot down, like I'm thinking about Space Race, but it didn't work. Like, he tried to tell Pearl no, and she just kidnapped his son.
Well, yeah, there's that. I also guess in that regard, the only force he was ultimately up against was Pearl and her own desires.
Right.
There was a pressing external thing like a ship or ships or whatever Jim World's up to.
Mm-hmm. He just kind of demonstrated in that episode, at least, that he is willing to put his foot down sometimes and say, no, this is too dangerous. I'm not letting you take my son into space. Yeah, with something like this, it does seem like, you know, he would have to be realistic about the situation that Steven is involved, whether he likes it or not. That's got to be super hard for a parent to watch his kid go through that and worry about him and stuff.
Yeah, and on top of the, you know, these people might devastate the city/country/earth into the bargain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, not knowing what's coming and then kind of feeling like these people that you've known for so much of your life they're going to have to demonstrate their sort of soldier status, and you're going to have to put all your trust in them to protect your city. It's pretty ominous at this point, like, but so many unknowns that, you know, it's hard to know how seriously to take it.
And obviously they've had at least something like this conversation before, which is how we got to the other three gems are raising, at least actively home raising Stephen, and he is not.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't live with his kid. It's true. Yeah, he must understand that, like, he needs their mentorship because he's going to need to be able to perform as a gem in his life. Oh, that's really hard.
Maybe Greg was kind of hoping, well, if Homeworld's not bothered us for thousands of years, maybe they can at least not bother us for the rest of my son's life.
It's not too unreasonable, huh? Yeah. Oh, so I guess we'll have to wait and see what Mr. Universe does.
Yeah. We got a couple of songs this week.
Yeah, one was a reprise of the other, kind of an expansion of the other.
Yeah, so I suppose if you squint hard, it could be three songs even.
So the first song was Steven singing about Lapis, how he wanted his dad to think about her. And then Greg took that same set of chords and the same melody and turned it into a song about the Wailing Stone and how he felt about not being able to help. And then he sort of insulted his own song after he was done. That's a B-side. It's hard to listen to it on the soundtrack and not hear him say that. It's like listening to it. So many people probably mutter that under their breaths after it's over.
I can also easily imagine how someone like Greg expresses despondency about something. Oh, that's a B-side.
I think some younger viewers didn't know what that means.
I definitely got it. I've also heard from a completely unrelated show, someone was dissing someone else's idea by saying, oh, that's a double B-side.
Well, sometimes I like the B-side better.
Yeah. I can also kind of imagine kids picking up this expression and not actually knowing what it means and confusing their parents that suddenly they're saying, oh, that's a B-side.
I guess some of the lyrics to Greg's song were, you know, I kind of assumed from his behavior that he felt and thought those things, but he was really very clearly expressing that he wishes that they would respect him, that the gems would, you know, give him some faith in, you know, not just treat him like he's something that they humor.
Yeah.
That's just heartbreaking, too, because, you know, from what we've seen of Greg Universe, he seems like such a genuine good person and such a great dad. So I don't want him to feel inferior.
And Pearl in particular, I mean, leaving aside the business from maximum capacity as sort of an extreme, but Pearl in particular does seem to have a bit of a, oh, we get on fine when things are going right attitude about him. Messing around, tinkering with his van. That was working, so she's cool with that. When his soundtrack doesn't work, she's just, oh, what a waste of time. In fact, not even to his face. Like, he's not even worth having it said to his face.
Yeah. She definitely got outvoted that they were going to try his equipment and let this human mess around with the technology. I guess she probably also feels like she should have been able to figure it out since she's kind of their tech person.
Yeah. So there might be a bit of a, I don't want Greg figuring it out. I don't want Greg figuring it out instead of me.
Right. Like, all right, Pearl, well, go get some scraps from the Amethyst's room and invent a machine to translate this already, Miss Smarty Pants.
Yeah. For the one you'd assume knew the most about manners, she's really the kind of most insensitive.
Right. I definitely get the idea that she's doing that on purpose. Like, she's not doing it out of ignorance. She's just like, no, you're beneath me. Rude. He's just a human.
Whereas I think Garnet, as we said, she recognizes that he has been helpful and knows what it means to him to hear that.
Right. You know, and Steven's right there being like, my dad's the best, you know, so.
And I think if also tying into how seldom we've seen her, like, snap or raise her voice to her sisters, compatriots, whatever we're calling them, I think she definitely placed value on, you know, it's a net good if we recognize what Greg has done, how he has helped us, and make him feel good for that because he did a good thing.
Yeah, he got little tears in his eyes when she thanked him.
Yeah, I don't think, even though she also can be somewhat insensitive in her own way, I don't think she goes out of her way to hurt people just because. I'm mostly thinking of in Secret Team when she snapped at the others about what's going on that episode, but that's because she sort of wanted to make the point to them and kind of wanted to hurt them a little bit at least to open their eyes to the problem.
Mm-hmm. Right. She said some pretty weird and straightforwardly rude things in Fusion Cuisine.
Well, yes, I think that's more what they just called innocently or at least uncaringly insensitive as opposed to trying to be hurtful.
Right. Although she did make that comment then about, like, well, all comedy is derived from fear. They must fear me. Oh my gosh. She's funny. She is just kind of a weirdly awkward person. Like, you don't get this sort of, like, stammering, stuttery kind of awkwardness from her. She's just blunt, and that's awkward.
Well, like, when she completely deadpan reports the children having played of swords and died.
Mm-hmm. Like, and just tell his mother that the children are dead, she'll never call again.
And that was, I panicked.
Yes! God, it's great. But, you know, she didn't have to say it particularly warmly to Greg when she thanked him. She just, the words were enough that she stated factually, we would not have received this message without your help. Greg, thank you.
Probably also knows if she doesn't let it out often, it means more when she does.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I've seen occasionally people will pick up on, like, those warm moments that she has and say, well, this is a little out of character, but I very much disagree when people say things like that, because I'm like, no, what you're seeing is that she does not say these things just willy-nilly. You know that she's saying them because that is a rare sentiment that she wants to express. Mm. So next on Garnet analysis. Psychoanalyze Garnet. Right?
I think we've made the Vulcan comparison before.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see that. Can't really tell what her ears look like under that hair.
But I'm thinking especially of later portrayals of Spock on various iterations of Star Trek. You've had, and it goes right back to the earliest ones, though. Sometimes people say, but he's displayed a hint of emotion. They've got it all wrong. And it's like, it's never been that he has no emotion and is incapable of it. It's about how restrains, disciplines, or lets it out or not. That's always been his thing. He doesn't, like, lack an emotion gland or whatever.
Right.
And I think it's the same with Garnet.
I'd agree. Hmm. She's very, like, self-contained with, she is processing internally, apparently. And she's just kind of inscrutable when you look at her face.
And probably has a bit of a raising a hue and cry won't help this situation, so I won't do it thing.
Right. Hmm. It's interesting because even kind of the normal surprised gasps and, you know, winces and jumps and stuff, she just doesn't even really participate in them.
It's rare to see her display getting caught out like that.
Right.
And when she does, it's usually dwarfed by the others around her.
Oh, yeah. Goodness, yes, definitely. I mean, she's displayed surprise or shock before, but it's, yeah, it's just never as demonstrative. It's still guarded doing it. So I'm afraid I don't have any food.
Everyone was too busy playing with sound to eat everything this week.
There was a pizza, but I believe it was a fish stew pizza, and I've made that before, so I didn't make another one for this episode.
Yeah, although I did like that line, I've got to stay here and finish this pizza.
Yeah, Steven, you go find out what's going on, because I've got to stay here and do this. Got to take care of this pizza. Good, Greg. Funny. But yeah, I did not make any food for this episode, sadly.
If only I had known that!
I might have a few factoids.
Let's go.
I think I already told you the storyboarders, which I always like to mention who boarded it, which was Lamar and Helen again. And what else? I think the main thing I always think of as like a trivia thing for this episode is that some of the noise, like right before the Wailing Stone exploded the battery on the van, there was kind of this voice coming through. And one of the factoids I read about this later is that that was Rebecca Sugar's voice. So it's like one of the only times you really hear her in the show. She doesn't do anybody's voice or anything.
So. Yeah, I'm always expecting her to make creator cameos and keeps not doing it, except apparently as a bit of distorted message whale song feedback thing.
Yeah, they threw that into the mix there and it was her voice getting cut off just as the van battery exploded. So that's one of the things that I know. The other thing that I feel like this is almost like, I don't know if it counts as a factoid because it's just something that bugged me, but when Greg and Steven were playing guitar at the beginning, they were kind of holding their guitars like opposite to each other so that it looked like Steven was playing left-handed, but he typically doesn't do that. He's not left-handed and he usually plays his uke or guitars or anything right-handed like most people do. So I thought that was weird.
Yeah. If he's ambidextrous, it hasn't come up before.
Yeah, I don't think it has. Yeah. And I mean, even most left-handed people will play instruments the way right-handed people do. So, but not always, but I think it's more common. I usually do tell you the episode description. Here it is. Yeah, the episode description for this is Steven and the Gems try to retrieve a message from the Wailing Stone.
Yeah.
Doesn't mention Greg.
Doesn't spoil it, but there's only so much to spoil other than the content of the message, so.
That wasn't too bad.
Brand spanking new mint inbox.
All I have left for you is to show you some merch.
All right, let's see some merch.
So for this one, I chose to show you some toys.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I consider this to be a pretty Greggy episode, so I wanted something that Greg would be in, and he's not in a lot of the toy sets, so I want to show you one of the ones that is. I'm going to pick up my camera and show you these guys.
Oh, cool.
You're going to laugh, and then we'll tell them what they are.
Oh.
Here we go. I'm going to put this down here, and then here's Greg right at the front. He's a weird little ball.
Ball-headed man thing.
Yeah. So these are called capsule buildables, and they come like, I don't know, if maybe I can show you this more easily if I put my camera back where it goes. There. Look at how this guy, he comes apart, his head cracks open. And his body goes inside of his head. He comes like this.
Oh!
With a little capsule. It's so weird. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. Yeah, so you get this little
That's cute, but slightly alarming.
Yes. And I think Greg makes a pretty good capsule buildable because, I don't know, he's kind of a round head dude.
Yeah, he loses the waves of mullet, but I think it does good for the rest of him. So that's a fair trade.
The set includes two Stevens, and they
of
are
course.
A Steven that's smiling and a Steven that's smiling widely with star eyes.
Yeah.
And you can get these in like gumball machines. There is a Peridot, so I thought this would be a good one to include since she's mentioned in the episode. There's no Lapis. Peridot they cannot do this properly because her hair is triangular. So.
Yeah, so she kind of looks funny, all squatified.
Yeah. Evil grin on her face. And then, of course, we've got Garnet, Amethyst, and Pearl. Pearl looks kind of good. You know, she's kind of a round-headed, oval-headed person.
And they've gone with drawing on her nose rather than trying to recreate the shape, which is, I think, works best for this one.
Yeah, they're all just painted. And then Amethyst.
It makes her look, without the flowing hair on this one, it makes her look a bit like the young version of Amethyst we saw in a flashback.
True. And Garnet is really... She does not translate well to this round form.
No, I love the expression on this one's face, though. I'll go with that.
Not impressed.
Yeah.
But she has a round head, and she is the most square of squares.
Yeah, I was going to say, given what most people remember about it, is that she's square, making her round.
Yeah. So, of course, one thing that, of course, when you get toys like this, you can't help but play around with them and do terrifying things like, you know, put different bodies on.
We've got Garnet's head on
Greg's body.
Yeah, is that the back of Greg's body, no less?
I think so.
Making it look like she's got a giant Alan Moore beard.
There we go. So, yeah, you can interchange them. You can make them weird, terrifying fusions. But I think this is a pretty inventive way to make a toy. Because their body will be inside of the head and you can put them together. Whoops, I dropped one of the Greg capsules. So yeah, this is fun. I believe I just bought the complete set from... Yeah, there's a cartoon-themed store called the Mystery Shack. And I bought the complete set from them. That store name is a reference to Gravity Falls, which I also like. But I figured it would be better to do that than try to do like the mystery box items and... get a bunch of duplicates. I think that's how they come. So, yeah. So those are some fun toys that include Greg. Greg, the ball of Greg.
Oh, he just looks so happy just sitting there being a ball.
He's just like, I guess this is my life right now. And you know what? I don't have to wash any cars.
Yeah, I stood too close to one of the others when they shapeshifted and this happened.
Yep. I guess this is just how the rest of my life is going to be now. It's all right, you know, if every pork chop were perfect, we wouldn't have hot dogs. So then I can just roll Greg around on surfaces if I want to. I'm done playing with toys, I guess, for now. What else should we say about this episode? I think I'm done.
I think I'm done too. We've dug pretty deep into an episode, which, as we ourselves said, very little actually happens in, as important as the one thing that happens is.
True.
And that one thing didn't technically, it only sort of confirmed things for us. It didn't really tell us anything that was a big shocker. We were kind of suspecting that something like that was going to happen, and Lapis has basically, as far as she knows at least, confirmed it for us.
Yes. That's what it seems like. Our next episode is called Political Power. So I guess we'll see what continues in that one very shortly.
Yeah.
I'm putting Greg's head back on his body as we speak.
There we go. He's complete again.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see everyone next time for Political Power.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
You've been listening to Ivy and Daria on Not So Giant Women.
You can find episodes of the show in video form by looking up Not So Giant Women on YouTube.
Or in audio form at anchor.fm/notsogiantwomen or your podcatcher of choice. You can also find us on Facebook.
Audio production by Daria.
Video production and music by Ivy.
Daria can also be heard on Podsploitation, the Ozploitation podcast.
And Ivy at her Steven Universe fan blog at love-takes-work.tumblr.com.
Steven Universe was created by Rebecca Sugar and remains property of Cartoon Network.
No infringement is intended.